A calorie is a calorie is a calorie. And anyone who claims otherwise is a heretic. If you've counted calories for so long that you could do it in your sleep, you'll be overjoyed to know that lipolysis allows you to take in more calories and still lose more weight as compared with low-fat, calorie-restricted diets. Carbohydrate is a major category of food, including all the fruits, vegetables, grains, and starches. If you choose, as I hope you will, to do Atkins for a lifetime, you must bring some exacting standards to the process of deciding what carbohydrate foods you intend to eat. And make no mistake, I'm determined to teach you how to fashion a great way to eat, long-term, not simply a weight loss regimen. When doing Atkins, you will control the number of grams of carbohydrates you eat and will focus on certain food groups rather than others. One reason you will need to do this is because not all carbohydrate found in food is created equal. Most carbohydrate is digested by your body and turned into glucose, and most nutritionists refer to this as digestible carbohydrate. However, some carbohydrate can be digested by your body but not turned into glucose. Glycerin is one example. And some carbohydrate is not digestible at all, such as fiber, and is therefore eventually excreted by your body. These last two types of carbohydrate don't have an impact on your blood sugar levels. Understanding the different behavior of carbohydrate in your body can help you make smart food choices. The fact that fiber is not converted to blood sugar makes for an interesting benefit for people doing Atkins, allowing you to sneak in a few extra carbs in the form of high-fiber foods. Let me explain what I mean by sneaking, because it is most definitely not the same thing as cheating. Let's compare a cookie made of white flour and sugar with a couple of fiber-rich crackers. Both contain 10 grams of carbs. But there the similarity ends. Eat the cookie, and you'll send all 10 grams of carbs coursing into your bloodstream. But when you chomp into the crackers, which have, say, 4 grams of fiber, only 6 of those 10 grams impact on your blood sugar. Basically, you can deduct the grams of fiber from the food's total carb count. I call the net number of grams the carbs that count when you do Atkins. In the case of those crackers, you got a 4-gram free ride. Consider the possibilities. By merely choosing fiber-rich foods over their flab-inducing refined counterparts, you can benefit your health and get more bang for your carbohydrate buck. And determining which carbs count is simple. Check the total fiber grams listed on the food label and subtract that number from the total grams of carbohydrate listed. To know how many grams of carbohydrate a portion of a certain food contains, you will likely need a carbohydrate gram counter. An extensive version, continually updated, is available on our website at www.atkinscenter.com. This is a good time for me to disabuse you of the long-held notion that there was some enormous difference between so-called simple and complex carbohydrates. That theory held that simple carbs, such as sugar and white flour, sent glucose rushing into your bloodstream faster than complex carbs, such as fruits, potatoes, and whole grains. But Liu and Willett and other researchers found that two foods that contribute most to elevating blood sugar to an excessive level, called the glycemic load, are baked potatoes and cold breakfast cereals. These foods were traditionally classified as complex as opposed to simple carbohydrates. However, they behaved just as simple carbohydrates do. So the glycemic index appears to be a better gauge of the impact of various carbohydrates on your blood sugar. As research continues to associate high glucose load with increased risk of heart disease, we need to pay closer attention not only to the amount of carbohydrates consumed, but also to their position on the glycemic index. Choosing your carbohydrate foods from the lower end of the glycemic index is fundamental common sense, and for a person doing Atkins, an important building block for permanent weight loss. In addition to being helpful for weight loss, the glycemic index has enormous potential as a tool for minimizing the risk factors associated with certain diseases. As the message spreads that hyperinsulinism is a factor in certain illnesses and disease, and it has spread like wildfire in the medical establishment over the last 5 or 6 years, the glycemic index becomes an ever more important tool for selecting foods. In my practice, most of my patients have symptoms of unstable blood sugar. You may know it as hypoglycemia. Time and time again, I have found this condition dramatically clears up when a diet inducing a lower glycemic response is followed. Also, doctors who specialize in diabetes are learning not only how important it is to control their patients' intake of carbohydrates, but how the glycemic index can help their patients do that intelligently. In encouraging you to eat your vegetables, I certainly have no intention of compromising the basic weight loss principles of Atkins. Yes, I want you to consume plenty of nutrients, but you must do so without eating so many carbohydrates that you sabotage your weight loss efforts. Each person has a critical carbohydrate level for losing, CCLL. And if you stay below that highly individual number, you will lose weight. However, if you exceed that level, even with all healthy foods, your body will not switch to burning fat as the primary source of fuel. We need a way to focus on health-promoting phytonutrients that also provide blood sugar stability and weight loss. Fortunately, we're in luck. Nature dovetails with the Atkins plan beautifully, and the vegetables densest in nutrients happen to be those lowest in carbs. Salad greens and other leafy greens, escarole, spinach, parsley, watercress, arugula, Boston and romaine lettuce, are nutrient powerhouses that are low on the glycemic index. Some other excellent health choices include asparagus, bamboo shoots, broccoli, cabbage, cauliflower, collard greens, eggplant, kale, kohlrabi, leeks, okra, onions, pumpkin, scallions, snow peas, spaghetti squash, string or wax beans, Swiss chard, tomato, turnips, water chestnuts, and zucchini. Even during induction, the first phase of Atkins, and the one which is most restrictive of carbohydrates, most of you will be able to eat 1 cup of those vegetables daily, as well as 2 cups of salad vegetables, or just 3 cups of salad vegetables. As your metabolism permits, most of you will add more vegetables during the increasingly liberal phases that follow. By the time you're in the lifetime maintenance phase, you may well be able to eat almost every vegetable, although some in moderation or only rarely. Still, it is always a good idea to make the high-nutrient, lower-carbohydrate ones your primary choices. Keep a carbohydrate gram counter and a glycemic index on your refrigerator. One could be found at www.atkinscenter.com. Of course, there are lots of people who start Atkins more than a little pleased with the fact that I certainly won't discourage them from eating meat, fish, and fowl. I'm a carnivore, too. But I'm also an omnivore, meaning I eat anything that's healthy. I know there are some people who simply don't like vegetables, or at least they don't like the ones they've eaten so far. The funny thing is that a lot of folks who do Atkins eventually find vegetables they can love. Perhaps it's because many people who follow the program end up trying many recipes and dishes they have never eaten before. They are making all sorts of healthy changes in their eating habits, and in that context, sampling new foods doesn't seem particularly revolutionary. If you've always been a grudging consumer of vegetables, I hope you'll become a vegetable-eating convert. Vegetables don't have to become your favorite food, but if you can lure yourself into dietary habits that put more of them on your plate than most Americans eat, you will be doing your noble, hard-working body an immense favor. Think of all the things your body does for you. I'm sure you'll agree that it's payback time. I'd like to discuss facts and fallacies about the Atkins nutritional approach. I'm almost certain that you're listening to this audio recording because you know of someone who has lost weight, and likely overcome other health problems, by following the individualized nutritional approach you've been hearing about here. and you've decided you want to feel good, look good, and be revitalized too. But you may be wondering why not everyone acknowledges the fact, and it is a fact, that controlling carbohydrates the Atkins way is the ideal eating strategy for losing weight and promoting good health. One reason the Atkins nutritional approach has not been part of mainstream teaching, although the tide is beginning to change, as well it should, has been misinformation. If you've encountered these critical articles suggesting that Atkins is dangerous, not to mention ineffective, you may have mixed feelings about starting a lifetime of controlled carbohydrate eating. Let me ease your misgivings. It is clear to me, and to every doctor I've met who has had adequate experience with Atkins, that this program should be the treatment of choice, not only for obesity, but for diabetes and several other diet-related disorders. The misinformation saddens me, because it has prevented so many people in need from using and benefiting from the best treatment available. In effect, these ill-informed reviews are propagating epidemic, life-threatening conditions. That is why I am taking the time here, before we get into how to do Atkins today and for life, to address these criticisms. I don't want you to have any lingering questions or doubts as you listen to the remainder of this recording. Too much is at stake, namely your health and well-being. Modern medical history contains few examples of such vast discrepancies between what is said in print and the truth. You may find that the explanations in this chapter sound a bit scientific. This was done on purpose. I want you to have the full complement of information at your disposal to counter any challenge you get. Armed with information gleaned from my 40 years of clinical experience and with the support of specific scientific studies, you will be able to hold your own, and likely to sway opinion, in any debate that comes your way. Fact versus fallacy. Fallacy. Ketosis is dangerous and causes a variety of medical problems. Fact. Our bodies have only two fuel delivery systems to provide us with energy. Our primary fuel is based on carbohydrate and is delivered as glucose. People who eat three so-called balanced meals every day get virtually all their energy from glucose. But the alternate backup fuel is stored fat. And this fuel system delivers energy by way of ketones whenever our small supply of glucose is used up, in a maximum of 2 days. When a person doing Atkins releases ketones, he or she is in ketosis. Ketosis occurs when you're taking in a very low level of carbohydrate from the food you eat, as you will during much of the weight loss phases of Atkins. Ketones are secreted in the urine, and at times in one's breath, a perfectly normal and natural function of the body. The more ketones you release, the more fat you have dissolved. Part of this fallacy is the claim that ketones can build up to dangerous levels in the body. Studies show that ketone bodies are very tightly regulated in the body and will not increase beyond the normal range in healthy individuals. Uncontrolled diabetics, alcoholics, and people who have been on prolonged fasts might see an increase in ketones beyond the normal range. The body regulates ketone levels in the same way it regulates blood glucose or pH levels. And in the clinical setting of my practice, it has been repeatedly demonstrated that overweight patients produce just enough ketones to meet their immediate needs for fuel, and no more. A person will have no more ketones after 3 months of controlling carbohydrates than they do after 3 days. It is highly unlikely that people, other than insulin-dependent diabetics, will build up ketones. So the next time you read that the ketosis produced by the Atkins nutritional approach is dangerous, challenge the writer, in a letter to the editor if necessary, and ask, what is so dangerous about using up your stored fat? Fallacy. The Atkins nutritional approach is only effective for weight loss because calories are restricted. Fact. While some people who follow the Atkins nutritional approach may eat fewer calories than before, it certainly is not because the program limits calorie intake. People doing Atkins may end up eating fewer calories because they are generally less hungry and no longer obsessed with food. This occurs for 2 reasons. 1. Stable blood sugar throughout the day ensures that you will have fewer food cravings and false hunger pains. 2. The food eaten by a person doing Atkins, meat, fish, cheese, nuts, eggs, and low-sugar, low-starch vegetables and fruit, is less processed and more nutritious than that on the typical pre-Atkins menu. Give a body fewer empty calories, provide it with more nutrient-dense alternatives, and it will logically be satisfied sooner and require less food. Fallacy. The Atkins nutritional approach is unbalanced and deficient in basic nutrition. Fact. The Atkins nutritional approach actually provides more nutrients than the typical American diet. It deliberately rebalances your way of eating. It is probable that the eating pattern that led to your weight gain was improperly balanced in the first place. The evidence showing that overproduction of insulin is responsible for most weight gain is quite impressive. And the best way to correct an insulin disorder is to avoid foods that stimulate insulin activity, that is, foods high in carbohydrates. However, the Atkins nutritional approach does not exclude these foods, fruits, vegetables, and grains. The induction phase of Atkins, which people often mistake for the entire program, is the most strict, permitting only 20 grams of carbohydrates each day. Those 20 grams come in the form of green leafy vegetables, and also can include nutrient-dense, high-fiber, low-carbohydrate vegetables such as broccoli, asparagus, eggplant, and spinach. Hardly foods lacking in nutrients. A sample induction menu containing 2,000 calories and 20 grams of carbohydrate was analyzed using the highly regarded Nutritionist 5 program, the computer program used by nutritionists worldwide. Results of the analysis found the menu to meet or exceed recommended daily intake, RDI, requirements of 19 of the 24 vitamins, minerals, and trace elements, and the remaining few, pantothenic acid, sodium, magnesium, copper, chromium, and molybdenum, can easily be replaced with a supplement. Once they complete induction and begin the next phase of the program, individuals can raise their carbohydrate gram count. This phase prescribes even more nutrient-dense green leafy vegetables and fruits, such as strawberries. With these additions, the plan far exceeds requirements for fiber. The second part of this criticism is more thought-provoking. I, for one, am deeply committed to finding a vitanutrient solution for most health problems. This means that I believe no eating pattern contains optimal nutrition, and that all of us can improve our health by taking vitanutrients that are targeted to our individual health problems, disease risks, and nutrient deficiencies. That said, let's look at the essential nutrient contributions made by the foods people eat on low-fat diets. These foods are low in the fat-soluble vitamins A, D, E, and K, and the essential fatty acids, our number one deficiency in this country. They also may be low in nutrients we get from meat, such as vitamin B12, and carnitine. And if people overeat foods made from white flour, which is often the case on low-fat diets, they will be low in half the B-complex nutrients, the half that isn't included in the mandatory enrichment, and most of the essential minerals. People on a low-fat diet need supplementation desperately. Fallacy. People doing Atkins may feel tired, weak, and lacking in energy. Fact. Fatigue may occur during the first few days of doing Atkins, while the body adapts to the switch in metabolic pathways. It typically takes about 3 to 4 days for the body to convert from a sugar metabolism to a primarily fat metabolism. Your body can store carbohydrates for only up to 48 hours, so you can be confident that your metabolic switch will occur as long as you are doing Atkins properly. After the transition, those people who were tired at first usually report high energy and clear thinking throughout the day. The explanation is simple. They have rebalanced their nutrition so that their blood sugar is stabilized. They avoid blood sugar peaks and valleys throughout the day, putting an end to mood swings and periods of lethargy. And those people who consume a full vitanutrient program are much less likely to feel weak or tired even at the start of Atkins. Fallacy. A nutritional approach that promotes a liberal intake of high-fat meats and dairy products will raise cholesterol levels, ultimately leading to heart disease. Fact. I certainly do not deny that every major health organization, as well as the United States government, endorses a low-fat diet in the unquestioned belief that fat causes heart disease. But are they right? A good deal of compelling evidence points in the opposite direction. A growing body of scientific literature demonstrates that a controlled carbohydrate eating plan, if followed correctly, promotes heart health and improves clinical health markers. One study, conducted by Jeff S. Volek, MS, RD, PhD, while at Ball State University, showed the positive effects of a controlled carbohydrate nutritional approach on triglyceride levels. The study consisted of 12 healthy men, ages 20 to 55, who followed a controlled carbohydrate program adhering to the Atkins protocols for 8 weeks. Upon completion of the study, each participant lowered his triglyceride levels by an average of 55%. Furthermore, this study showed that a higher carbohydrate diet results in increased levels of triglycerides and decreased levels of HDL cholesterol, the good kind. These factors have been associated with higher risks of myocardial infarction, ischemic heart disease, and coronary heart disease events. In addition, various researchers have demonstrated that high triglycerides and low HDL alone, as opposed to the total cholesterol number most of us focus on, may be the most important factors in heart disease and stroke. We can also look at the research that's come out of Framingham, Massachusetts, the community studied for 50 years by Harvard researchers to glean meaningful information about the cause of heart disease. This research showed that the risk of heart disease increased both with high cholesterol levels and obesity, but their data showed that weight gain and cholesterol levels were inversely correlated with dietary fat and cholesterol intake. In other words, consuming less fat and cholesterol resulted in more weight gain and higher blood cholesterol. More recently, the Framingham researchers reported on a study in which the young, healthy male population of the community was followed for several decades to see which dietary patterns might lead to having a stroke. To their amazement, they found that those with the highest intake of saturated fats had the fewest ischemic strokes, the most common kinds, a whopping 76% less than those with the lowest intake of saturated fat. Fallacy. The Atkins nutritional approach is the most severe of the controlled carbohydrate plans and is most likely to have immediate adverse effects. Fact. Since there's nothing harmful about a controlled carbohydrate nutritional approach, the concept of severity isn't especially meaningful. The idea of severity surely comes from the low level of carbohydrate consumed during the induction phase. Induction's purpose is to jumpstart the body chemistry into fat mobilization. Throughout the other phases of Atkins, each individual seeks the most permissive level of carbohydrate intake that still results in weight loss or weight maintenance. You're probably raring to start Atkins and begin losing weight. But there are two medically important steps and several practical preparations that will lay the groundwork for your success. First, a crucial warning. People with severe kidney disease, creatinine over 2.4, should not do any phase of Atkins unless ordered to do so by their physician. Also, pregnant women and nursing mothers may do the lifetime maintenance phase, but should not do any of the weight loss phases of Atkins. The first thing you must do is review any medications you take and make a doctor's appointment to get a complete physical, including some blood work and other tests. I'd like you to understand why having a medical workup before beginning Atkins is so important, both from a health perspective and to help motivate you to follow the program faithfully. A patient of mine named David French, a 52-year-old stockbroker, had tried countless diets and failed on all of them. He came to me somewhat reluctantly, nagged, I suspect, by his wife and children. During our first conversation, he quickly expressed his skepticism, groaned at the thought of taking vitamins, and seemed to me like someone who would not stick with the program. Although he weighed 206 pounds at only 5 feet 8 inches tall, he had no obvious health problems other than generalized fatigue and difficulty with even very mild physical exertion. Let's at least check your blood lipid levels, Mr. French, I said, and then we'll have some idea of whether you have anything to worry about. The word lipids is medicalese for cholesterol and triglycerides, traditionally regarded as the main blood indicators for heart disease risk. The blood tests were enlightening. His total cholesterol was a whopping 284, and his triglycerides level was an incredible 1,200. At our next meeting, I let him have it with both barrels. If you don't do something soon, I'd say you're probably going to die in the next year or two, Mr. French. That caught his attention. In all probability, I told him, a heart attack or a stroke would be his undoing. He also showed signs of being a borderline diabetic. His condition was completely reversible, but when he left my office that day, I didn't think he'd make the effort to reverse it. I was wrong. Dave started doing Atkins, and 6 months later, he weighed 162 pounds. His total cholesterol was 155, and his triglycerides were 90. He had been a carbohydrate eater his whole life. He'd hit the coffee cart for bagels and rolls, stop on the way home from work for a calzone, and drank soda pop every day. But Dave thrived on my program, reassured by the fact he could eat until he was completely satisfied. If you're hungry, eat, I said. I also persuaded Dave to do a half hour of exercise 4 times a week. He soon found that he slept better and felt far less tired during the day. Also, physical exertion was no longer beyond him. Dave is a slim and healthy man now, and he won't let himself slip into his old ways. I have a picture that I keep on the desk of my office that shows the maximum me, he says. I look like I'm going to have a baby. I keep the photo right there where I can see it, to remind me of what I'll never be again. Nowadays, I don't even look like the same person. Even more important, Dave French probably wouldn't be alive today if the results of his blood work hadn't shocked him into changing his ways. The medical steps you should take before you begin to change your eating habits. You will need to stop taking any unnecessary over-the-counter medications, such as cough syrup or cough drops, antacids, sleep aids, antihistamines, or laxatives. Many prescription medications also inhibit weight loss. You can also refer to Dr. Atkins' Vitanutrient solution for more natural approaches to deal with your symptoms. Also, please visit www.atkins.com. There are also several categories of drugs that can cause adverse effects when taken while on a controlled carbohydrate eating plan. First are the diuretics, because reducing your carbohydrate intake alone can have a dramatic diuretic effect. Second, since Atkins is so effective at lowering high blood sugar, people who take insulin or oral diabetes medications that stimulate insulin can end up with dangerously low blood sugar levels. Third, Atkins has a strong blood pressure lowering effect and can easily convert blood pressure medications into an overdose. If you are currently taking any of these medications, you will need your doctor's help to adjust your dosages. You must be sure to get a checkup and have your blood work done. When you go to your doctor, I recommend that you get your blood chemistries and lipid levels measured, and quite possibly the glucose tolerance test, with insulin levels drawn at fasting and at 1 and 2 hour intervals, before you start the program. Lipid levels will reveal your total cholesterol, HDL, good, and LDL, bad cholesterol, and triglycerides. These indicators often change with drastic dietary intervention. The blood chemistries will measure baseline glucose, kidney, and liver function. Be sure your doctor also measures your uric acid levels. Since many people wrongly believe that these indicators are negatively affected by doing Atkins, you may later regret not having a before baseline to compare with your after results. If you choose to keep track of those hidden physical changes that are measured in your blood, you'll find that after you start Atkins, they should begin improving steadily. I don't want you to wait to have your initial lab work done until after you start Atkins, because then you may think any abnormalities are the result of your new way of eating. You may well have had even higher cholesterol and triglycerides before you began. Your doctor will also check your blood pressure, High blood pressure, known as the silent killer, and being overweight often go together. Having high blood pressure, also called hypertension, puts you at clear risk for stroke and heart disease, and may indicate elevated insulin levels. What happens to high blood pressure on Atkins? It goes down. Nothing is more consistently or more rapidly observed than normalization of blood pressure. Lou Stasio was a good illustration of that. This 40-year-old New York policeman had gained 50 pounds over the previous 20 years and had, in the process, acquired a roof beam raising blood pressure of 180 over 110. He was on medication and was constantly fatigued. Doing Weight Watchers only introduced him to the pleasure of starvation. One day, he read an article about how overweight teenage children lost weight more easily on a controlled carbohydrate plan than on a low-fat diet. Well, why not him? He decided to give Atkins a try. In 8 months on the plan, Lou lost 60 pounds, was taken off his blood pressure medication, and now has an unmedicated blood pressure of 118 over 74, a first-class advertisement for cardiovascular health. You should also ask your doctor about your thyroid function. A sluggish thyroid is often responsible for obesity. If you have an underactive thyroid, getting the correct treatment may help solve your weight problem. Let's talk about the laboratory test most relevant to people starting Atkins, the 5-hour glucose tolerance test, GTT. If, after hearing the last few chapters, you suspect you may have a blood sugar or insulin imbalance that is contributing to your weight problems, discuss it with your doctor and request a 5-hour GTT with insulin levels. Since the onset of diabetes is insidious, and damage to the body can occur even before full-blown diabetes is first discovered, it is vitally important to be aware of the possibility you have pre-diabetes and of the degree of risk you may already suffer. If you're hesitating, consider this. We're not talking about headaches, acid indigestion, or ingrown toenails here. Need I remind you that the conditions the GTT with insulin levels can detect can be precursors to diabetes? 16 million people have diabetes. 1 in 3 doesn't know he or she has it. If you don't want to be drafted into the diabetic army, it pays to find out right now if you are a potential recruit. If your blood tests show that you're well along the road, you will suddenly have a reason for doing Atkins that is far stronger than your desire to shed excess poundage. If you became overweight early in life, this may have serious implications for your children too. Check your blood sugar and insulin levels so that you can know what condition they may have inherited from you. Taking early action to address the same issues in their diets can make a big difference. The GTT measures your blood sugar after 12 hours of fasting and then over the course of 5 to 6 hours after you drink a sugary liquid with no other food or beverage. Any variation from the normal range may be viewed with suspicion. If the highest reading is over 160 milligrams per cubic centimeter, it may suggest prediabetes. If the lowest reading is 30% below your baseline, or below 60 milligrams per cubic centimeter, you may have reactive hypoglycemia, more accurately called unstable blood sugar, an early stage of diabetes. If the difference between the highest and lowest readings is over 90 milligrams per cubic centimeter, it may indicate a problem, as does a drop in sugar level of 60 points or more within an hour. Many other criteria exist to show deviations from normal, all of which take on more importance if other symptoms exist, such as dizziness, trembling, palpitations, brain fog, craving sweets, binging, or other compulsive eating behaviors. If you have a family history of diabetes, it is essential that you be properly tested. Insulin levels should be measured along with your blood glucose levels at the fasting and 1 and 2 hour stages. Your fasting insulin should be below 19 units. 1 hour after the glucose drink, your insulin should be under 100, and 2 hours after, it should be below 60. I see some people in my practice with readings as high as 600. Note, the GTT results are not considered accurate unless you're consuming at least 150 grams of carbs a day for at least 4 days before you take the test. Therefore, doing it after you start Atkins would mean you'd have to go back temporarily to eating a high-carbohydrate diet, and almost certainly regain some of the pounds you have just successfully lost. If your GTT results point to problems in your body's ability to metabolize sugar, this alone should motivate you to change your diet. If your results are normal, you can count yourself fortunate that your new way of eating will forestall any future blood sugar and insulin problems. Let me remind you that although the Atkins plan has a positive effect on many conditions, if you have serious health problems, you must see your doctor before starting. You will need his or her help in monitoring your changing metabolism. Now that you've addressed the medical issues, it's time to ready your kitchen, your loved ones, and your own mindset. Don't skip any steps. Each one will help make this one of the most rewarding experiences of your life. Before you begin doing Atkins, use a tape measure to record some vital statistics. Measure your chest, waist, hips, upper arms, and thighs, and write down those numbers. When you measure yourself again in a couple of weeks, you'll be happy you did. The more ways you have of gauging your success, the more encouraged you'll be. Also, please fill out the blood sugar symptom test, which can be found at www.atkinscenter.com. You'll find the results of this test very helpful and may want to repeat the test regularly before considering a move to the next phase of my program. If you aren't already exercising, I strongly urge you to start doing so now. Even a half hour of brisk walking 4 times a week will make a big difference, especially if you're almost completely inactive now. Exercise has enormous benefits for your health and will speed your weight loss. It's a critical element of the healthy new you, and its importance cannot be overestimated. Stock the refrigerator and the cupboards with the food you're going to eat, including plenty of your favorite protein goodies. The next section will list acceptable and unacceptable foods specified for the induction phase of Atkins. When you go to the supermarket or health food store, avoid the aisles where the high-carbohydrate temptations are found. Whenever I give this advice, I think of John Connor. He was a 19-year-old, 6-foot-4-inch patient who dropped his weight from 290 pounds to 209 in 6 months by doing Atkins. He told me he'd often go to the supermarket to buy legitimate food, get sucked into one of the sugar-saturated aisles, and end up walking out of the store with a package of candy bars. During his drive home, self-control would reassert itself, and he'd lower the car window and throw the package into the street. What acceptable foods are your favorites? Do you love deviled eggs, turkey, chicken, shrimp salad, cheese? Have all these foods and more readily accessible in your refrigerator, along with plenty of low-carbohydrate vegetables and salad makings. I can't stress that enough. Better that a little food should be wasted than you should find yourself running out of the right foods and tempted by the wrong foods when hunger strikes. Next, get rid of all the foods and beverages you won't be consuming. This is easiest if you live alone and don't need to worry about what anyone else wants in the refrigerator. Invite friends over to finish off the ice cream. Have a carb blowout party. Give away all your forbidden foods, perhaps to a shelter for the homeless or a food bank. As a last resort, just toss them. Alter your mental picture. For you, these foods no longer exist. In addition to stocking up on the right foods, you'll want to purchase a good supply of the nutritional supplements I recommend and lipolysis testing strips, all of which you'll learn about later. You'll also want to stock up on the wide variety of controlled carbohydrate foods available in your local health food store, drug store, or in most supermarkets. Psychologically, have you made a firm commitment? Don't start something this important with the shallow notion of, oh well, I'll give it a whirl. At least you should have decided that you're going to commit 2 weeks of your life without deviation or compromise to doing Atkins. If you can commit yourself to that, I expect great things for you. By the end of 2 weeks, you'll be walking with new energy, getting out of bed in the morning with new zest, and joyously anticipating your encounters with the bathroom scale. You'll be so impressed with how you look and feel, continuing with the program for life will be a foregone conclusion. A note about that new energy and zest. Are you ready to increase your current level of physical activity? Another important step in getting ready is to have your exercise plan in place. You may not want to implement this plan, however, until after the first 2 days on Atkins. In that 48-hour period, you may feel tired and a bit off-kilter as your body makes its conversion from burning glucose to burning fat as its primary fuel. Welcome to the first phase of the Atkins Nutritional Approach. Induction. Induction is the way you get the weight loss ball rolling, not the whole Atkins Nutritional Approach. I call it induction because its purpose is to induce weight loss by changing your body's chemistry so that you'll achieve, perhaps for the first time in your life, lipolysis and the companion process of ketosis, as explained earlier. Induction is designed to do all of the following for you. Efficiently switch your body from a carbohydrate-burning metabolism to a primarily fat-burning, your fat, metabolism. Stabilize your blood sugar and abruptly halt myriad symptoms indicative of unstable blood sugar, such as fatigue, mood swings, brain fog, and an inability to function at your best. Curb your cravings by stabilizing your blood sugar. Break addictions to foods such as sugar, wheat, or corn derivatives, alcohol, caffeine, grain, or any other food. And to knock your socks off by demonstrating how much body fat you can burn while eating liberally, even luxuriously, off the fat of the land. The induction phase is not going to be your lifelong way of eating. It will last a minimum of 14 days, after which you should see a significant result. In a later phase, I'll teach you a series of steps that will enable you to craft your own personalized eating plan. This plan will be geared to create the best possible balance between your metabolic responses, your tastes and lifestyle, and your total health profile. Rules of induction. Another purpose of the induction phase is to demonstrate to you that even you can lose weight while eating luxuriously, but it must be followed precisely for success. If you do it at all incorrectly, you may prevent weight loss and end up saying, "Here's another weight loss plan that didn't work." So I want you to memorize the following 12 rules as though your life depends upon it. It does. 1. Eat either 3 regular-sized meals a day or 4 or 5 smaller meals. Do not skip meals or go more than 6 waking hours without eating. 2. Eat liberally of combinations of fat and protein in the form of poultry, fish, shellfish, eggs, and red meat, as well as of pure natural fat in the form of butter, mayonnaise, olive oil, safflower, sunflower, and other vegetable oils, preferably expeller-pressed or cold-pressed. 3. Eat no more than 20 grams a day of carbohydrate, most of which must come in the form of salad greens and other vegetables. You can eat approximately 3 cups, loosely packed, of salad, or 2 cups of salad plus 1 cup of other vegetables. 4. Eat absolutely no fruit, bread, pasta, grains, starchy vegetables, or dairy products other than cheese, cream, or butter. Do not eat nuts or seeds in the first 2 weeks. Foods that combine protein and carbohydrates, such as chickpeas, kidney beans, and other legumes, are not permitted at this time. 5. Eat nothing that is not on the acceptable foods list, and that means absolutely nothing. Your "just this one taste won't hurt" rationalization is the kiss of failure during this phase of Atkins. 6. Adjust the quantity you eat to suit your appetite, especially as it decreases. When hungry, eat the amount that makes you feel satisfied, but not stuffed. When not hungry, eat a small, controlled carbohydrate snack to accompany your nutritional supplements. 7. Don't assume any food is low in carbohydrate. Instead, read labels. Check the carb count. It's on every package. 8. Eat out as often as you wish, but be on guard for hidden carbs in gravies, sauces, and dressings. Gravy is often made with flour or cornstarch, and sugar is sometimes an ingredient in salad dressing. 9. Avoid foods or drinks sweetened with aspartame. Instead, use sucralose or saccharin. Be sure to count each packet of any of these as 1 gram of carbs. 10. Avoid coffee, tea, and soft drinks that contain caffeine. Excessive caffeine has been shown to cause low blood sugar, which can make you crave sugar. 11. Drink at least 8 8-ounce glasses of water each day to hydrate your body, avoid constipation, and flush out the byproducts of burning fat. 12. If you're constipated, mix a tablespoon or more of psyllium husks in a cup or more of water and drink daily. Or mix ground flaxseed into a shake and sprinkle wheat bran on a salad or vegetables. Foods you may eat liberally include all fish, all fowl, all shellfish, all meat, and all eggs. Just remember that oysters and mussels are higher in carbs than other shellfish, so limit them to 4 ounces per day. Also, processed meats such as ham, bacon, pepperoni, salami, hot dogs, and other luncheon meats, and some fish, may be cured with added sugar and will contribute carbs. Try to avoid meat and fish products cured with nitrates, which are known carcinogens. Also be aware of products that are not exclusively meat, fish, or fowl, such as imitation fish, meatloaf, and breaded foods. Finally, do not consume more than 4 ounces of organ meats a day. Other foods acceptable during induction are certain cheeses. You can consume 3 to 4 ounces daily of the full-fat, firm, soft, and semi-soft aged cheeses. You can have 2 to 3 cups per day of vegetables such as alfalfa sprouts, mushrooms, arugula, endive, parsley, bok choy, escarole, peppers, celery, and romaine. These salad vegetables are high in phytonutrients and provide a good source of fiber. Other vegetables which are acceptable and which you may have 1 cup a day of include artichoke hearts, celery root, pumpkin, asparagus, collard greens, snow peas, eggplant, spinach, tomatoes, cabbage, onions, and zucchini. If a vegetable such as spinach or tomato cooks down significantly, it must be measured raw so as not to underestimate its carb count. Salad garnishes can include crumbled crisp bacon, grated cheese, minced hard-boiled egg, and sour cream. All spices to taste are fine, but make sure none contain sugar. Herbs can include basil, garlic, rosemary, ginger, sage, cayenne, cilantro, oregano, tarragon, dill, pepper, and thyme. For salad dressing, use oil and vinegar, but not balsamic vinegar, which contains sugar, or lemon juice and herbs and spices. Prepared salad dressings without added sugar and no more than 2 carbs per tablespoon serving are also fine. Many fats, especially certain oils, are essential to good nutrition. Olive oil is particularly valuable. All other vegetable oils are allowed, the best being canola, walnut, soybean, grapeseed, sesame, sunflower, and safflower oils, especially if they're labeled cold-pressed or expeller-pressed. Do not cook polyunsaturated oils, such as corn, soybean, and sunflower oil, at high temperatures, or allow to brown or smoke. Butter is allowed. Margarine should be avoided, not because of its carbohydrate content, but because it is usually made of trans fats, hydrogenated oils, which are a serious health hazard. Some non-hydrogenated margarines are available in health food stores. You need not remove the skin and fat from meat or fowl. Salmon and other cold water fish are an excellent source of omega-3 fatty acids. I cannot stress strongly enough that trying to do a low-fat version of Atkins will interfere with fat burning and derail your weight loss. Acceptable beverages include clear broth or bouillon, not all brands, read the label, club soda, decaffeinated coffee or tea, diet soda made with sucralose, Splenda, essence-flavored seltzer, must say no calories and must not contain aspartame, herb tea, without barley or any fruit sugar added, lemon juice or lime juice. Note that each contains 2.8 grams carbohydrate per ounce. Limit to 2 to 3 tablespoons, mineral water, spring water, water, and cream heavy or light, but limit cream to 2 to 3 tablespoons a day and note carbohydrate content. You must determine which artificial sweeteners agree with you, but the following are allowed. Sucralose, marketed as Splenda, saccharin, cyclamate, acesulfame K. Natural sweeteners ending in the suffix -ose, such as maltose, fructose, etc., should be avoided. However, certain sugar alcohols, such as maltitol, do not affect blood sugar and are acceptable. Saccharin has been extensively studied, and harmful effects were produced in the lab when fed to rats, only in extremely high doses. The Food and Drug Administration, FDA, has removed saccharin from its list of carcinogens, basing its decision upon a thorough review of the medical literature and the National Institute of Science's statement that there is no clear association between saccharin and human cancer. It can be safely consumed, in moderation, meaning no more than 3 packets a day. Saccharin is marketed as Sweet'n'Low. We discourage the use of aspartame, marketed as NutraSweet and Equal. The FDA has approved the herb stevia for use only as a supplement, not as a sweetener. My preference, however, is sucralose, Splenda, the only sweetener made from sugar. Sucralose is safe, non-caloric, and does not raise blood sugar. It has been used in Canada for years, and the FDA recently approved it after reviewing more than 100 studies conducted over the past 20 years. Note that each packet of sugar substitute contains about 1 gram of carbohydrate, so don't forget to include the amount in your daily totals. To add variety, each day you can also eat 10 to 20 olives, half a small avocado, 1 ounce of sour cream, or 3 ounces of unsweetened heavy cream, as well as 2 to 3 tablespoons of lemon juice or lime juice. But be aware that these foods occasionally slow down weight loss in some people, and may need to be avoided in the first 2 weeks. If you seem to be losing slowly, moderate your intake of these foods. Although it is important that you eat primarily unprocessed foods, some controlled carb food products can come in handy when you're unable to find appropriate food, can't take time for a meal, or need a quick snack. As I mentioned earlier, more and more companies are creating healthy food products that can be eaten during the induction phase of Atkins. Just remember 2 things. 1. Not all convenience food products are the same, so check labels and carbohydrate content. I can vouch for any product carrying the Atkins brand name. 2. While any of these foods can make doing Atkins easier, don't overdo it. Remember, you must always follow the rules of induction. How will you fashion a food plan from the acceptable foods list? During induction and the other weight loss phases of Atkins, you will be consuming the types of foods and beverages aforementioned. Quality counts. Always aim for unprocessed, natural foods and select the freshest produce you can find. If possible, purchase organic meats and dairy products. Now that you know what foods you can eat, a meal plan should leap out at you. You should instantly see that for breakfast, a ham, cheese, and mushroom omelet, or nitrate-free bacon and scrambled eggs, or slices of smoked salmon wrapped around cream cheese would start off the day on the right note. For lunch, the typical chef salad with chicken, nitrate-free ham, cheese, and hard-boiled egg on a bed of greens, covered with a creamy garlic dressing, will qualify, as will a cheeseburger without the bun. Avoid ketchup, which contains sugar. Or maybe a chicken Caesar salad. Skip the croutons. Or a scoop of homemade tuna or chicken salad. Base your dinners around your favorite protein main courses. Lamb chops, poached salmon, roast chicken, filet mignon, buttered lobster tails, seafood mixed grill, or whatever you fancy, plus a salad. You might even have an appetizer such as shrimp cocktail with a mustard and mayonnaise sauce. Cocktail sauce has carbohydrates. Pâté, or steamed clams in garlic butter. And for dessert, have assorted cheeses or flavored gelatin made with sucralose and topped with whipped heavy cream. You are more likely to enjoy gourmet meals doing Atkins than on the low-fat diets that still wearily make the rounds. but for the moment, I merely want to introduce you to the notion that gourmet dining will be yours once you master all the possibilities offered by a nutritional plan that allows an intelligent and reasonable use of high-fat ingredients, including butter. Here and now, your attention should be totally focused on whether you feel you're in control of your eating and whether you feel healthy. Remember, during induction, my intention is to make you realize it is possible to be liberated from constant food cravings aggravated by unstable blood sugar. When you experience this liberation, and most significantly overweight people do, try to savor it. Notice how different it makes you feel. And remember, it's something you can enjoy only on a controlled carbohydrate eating plan. The foods you will be eating are tasty and nutrient-rich. But in starting people on my program, I have found that their vitamin and mineral reserves are often so depleted from the way they were eating before that it frequently takes a week or two of supplementation with vitanutrients to build them up again. This is one of the many reasons that after a few days on induction, you're likely to experience a burst of energy. Some critics of controlled carbohydrate weight reduction have made the suggestion that Atkins is so restrictive of certain foods that I have no choice but to advise everyone who goes on it to take vitamin and mineral supplements. There's only a smidgen of truth in this. When you go down to a low level of vegetable consumption during induction, the strictest phase of the program, you may be getting inadequate portions of certain nutrients. I stress may, because if you choose nutrient-dense foods, it's easy to consume adequate amounts of most vitanutrients. The real reason you'll need vitanutrients is because of the way you've likely been eating for years, or because of the low-fat diet that you may be following even as you hear this. If you've been on a low-fat diet, your need for supplementation may be profound. You'll have to play catch-up to make up for possible deficiencies of essential fatty acids, vitamin B12, and the fat-soluble vitamins A, D, and E. Several minerals are also in short supply on virtually all low-fat diets. Another reason you need vitanutrients is to maximize your body's ability to function optimally as a fat-burning unit. The more I learn about nutritional supplements, the more I discover nutritional components that can help nearly everyone. With the increasing depletion of nutrients in our soil, there is simply no way we can ensure that we get all we require from food. In fact, I consider individualized prescription of vitanutrients programs to be one of the two pillars of nutritional medicine. For the overweight, this program, of course, is the other pillar. Actually, controlling carbohydrate intake is the key to good health in general, even if you do not have a weight problem. The operative word is individualized. For each person requires a different roster of vitanutrients depending upon his or her individual health profile. I won't spend a lot of time during this recording describing all the many ways vitanutrients can help you overcome health problems. If you ever need information on how nutrients can solve health problems better than drugs do, you'll find it in Dr. Atkins' Vitanutrient Solution. For now, these are the nutritional supplements you should be taking during induction. A broad multiple vitamin and mineral supplement that contains considerably more than the recommended daily intake, RDI, of B-complex factors and vitamin C, and that also contains at least 30 other different nutrients, and no iron. Ideally, chromium picolinate or polynicotinate, between 200 and 600 micrograms, should be included. Essential fatty acids, EFA. EFA deficiency may be the most prevalent dietary shortage in our culture, thanks to the misguided obsession with avoiding dietary fat and the overconsumption of trans fats instead of healthy natural fats. An EFA supplement should include gamma-linolenic acid, GLA, primarily found in primrose or borage oil, and omega-3 fatty acids from fish oil or flaxseed oil. You can, of course, also eat salmon and other cold water fish. If you have sugar cravings, you should also take 500 milligrams of L-glutamine, one or two tablets, prior to each meal. L-glutamine has been shown to curb alcohol addiction as well. If you previously ate lots of carbohydrates, this will help to ease the transition to controlled carbohydrate eating. As mentioned in the rules of induction, you should also be supplementing with one or other form of fiber, usually wheat bran or psyllium husks, to prevent constipation. Now that you've begun, munch away. So here we go. You're doing Atkins, and naturally you begin by eating, something you've previously done with some degree of guilt. Say goodbye to all that. It's time to plow into those prime ribs and that cheese omelet. You must have faith. As you savor high-calorie food you always thought would make you fat, you can now relax. When carbohydrates are sufficiently reduced, the body has no choice but to burn its own fat. Moreover, at this stage, eating rich, fatty foods can only be advantageous. I encourage you to eat until you're satisfied. Just don't confuse being satisfied with being stuffed. If you have been overweight for a long time, it may take you a while to distinguish between the two sensations. If you're not sure, stop eating before you feel full, and see if you are still hungry a few minutes later. If you are, have a few more bites and stop again. Repeat until you're satisfied. Soon you will discover you are pleasantly full sooner and can avoid that feeling of getting up from the table feeling as stuffed as a Thanksgiving turkey. For the first few weeks, I want you to be unafraid of natural fat, butter, cream, cheese, olive oil, and the fat in meats, poultry, and fish. But remember to stay away from those evil trans fats, which are labeled as hydrogenated and partially hydrogenated fats. The ease of getting into deep lipolysis is based on the ratio of fat, not protein, to carbohydrate. Thus, you should strive for an adequate amount of fat during this initial period, and in doing so, you will almost certainly find yourself experiencing the most appetite-suppressing aspects of Atkins. What's the first thing you'll notice? After a couple of days, you'll find you're in control of your appetite. That's because once your body's two-day supply of glycogen, stored glucose, diminishes, and you make the switch to primarily burning fat, lipolysis suppresses your appetite. Suddenly, you find yourself eating moderate portions, without constant hunger pangs, and no longer obsessing about food. You know you're in lipolysis when you find yourself saying, "You mean lunchtime was an hour ago?" When you consume a so-called balanced diet, high in carbohydrates, the first fuel your body burns for energy comes from those carbohydrates. Now that you've lowered your carbohydrate consumption to a level that can't finance your energy expenditures, you must burn your stored fat. Your body draws upon those stores of fat. Easily, if you're metabolically average. Reluctantly, if you're metabolically resistant. You may be a person for whom incessant, almost hourly food cravings have been a way of life. Gordon Lingard was a patient who came to me weighing 306 pounds. He used to say, "I'd always be planning the next binge. I'd be in a business meeting, very serious, a lot of money at stake, and one half of my brain would be figuring out what I would eat, how much I would eat, when and where I would eat. Food had seized my brain,